Welcome to the Deep Sexy Play podcast. I'm your host, EJ Love, and this is my uncensored space designed to stimulate your mind and give you full permission to explore your curiosities and express your deepest sexual desires. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get turned on. So welcome to episode 2. I'm literally sitting here in my wardrobe right now. And this is because I realized on the last episode that you could hear some car noises outside of these glass doors that my desk is actually sitting right in front of. So I've tried to find the least noisy place. So here I am, sitting in my wardrobe. And I'm sitting here in this little black silky dress that I think I got from an op shop. And the reason that I'm telling you this is because this is actually my partner's favorite dress. And it is like something that is super comfortable for me. I love it because I don't wear any underwear with it. So it's really comfortable and it's like got a nice kind of stretchy, silky feel to it. And that is the reason that my partner loves it, because he can come up and he can grab me from behind and he can feel all my curves. He loves it. And I'm like, really? My $10 dress from an op shop is the one that you love the most out of everything? So I just wanted to give you a little description of of me sitting in the wardrobe in this little black, silky, tightish black dress doing this podcast episode. And this episode is where I'm going to share about sex and self-worth and being called a slut, and really my journey at a deeper level around sex and self-worth, and how I really for a long time linked my self-worth with my sexuality. And I think this is fairly common for a lot of women. I have worked with a lot of women that have been on this journey and have realized how much they identify their sex their worth being related to their sex. So I wanted to dive deeper into this and share some stories and also share about really my journey out of that and starting to really love myself and see myself as so much more than that and really honor my worth for who I am rather than being a sexual woman or providing sex. So one of the messages that I've seen and also experienced myself is this message that women experience, that essentially this, you must be sexual, but don't be too sexual. Put out, but don't put out too much. Don't be frigid, but don't be a slut either. And for me, I've been on that exact journey of feeling like, oh, I'm really frigid. I don't know anything about sex. I don't want to know what I'm doing. And feeling like I need to do something about that to change that. And then going to the other side and being really sexual, you know, being hypersexual. So it's been really interesting to explore that polarity. And both ways that this conditioning that, oh, you don't want to be frigid or you don't want to be a slut, both of them are saying that we're not enough as we are, right? That you have to be different. And what I'm really here to share is that your sexuality is for you and not for anyone else. It's for you. Yeah, and you're worthy just as you are, no matter what your sexual choices are, right? Or not. Yeah, so that's the biggest piece that I think we need to learn is that our self-worth is not determined by our sexual choices. Yeah, or if we're frigid, and I don't even want to really use that word, but if we're deemed as not sexual enough, yeah, because this is the piece, right? It's like either you're not sexual enough or you're too sexual. Right, and it's basically saying that this, none of this is okay. Whereas it's like, actually, it's okay. It is okay. And for me, I'm really more about like, what is true for you? And the more that we get conscious about our choices, what is our truth in that? Yeah, because I spent a long part of my life being, I started my life as feeling like I was very frigid, up until I was about 16, and being very sheltered and feeling like I knew nothing about sex, and and then going the polar opposite and going to what society would deem as a slut, someone that sleeps with lots of different people. Yeah, it's not how I choose to use the word slut anymore. I've reclaimed that word, as I talked about in the first episode. And so but what I've seen through the exploration of my sexuality and getting really clear on what my truth is in my sexual expression is that my healing is really being more conscious of my choices, what feels true in my body, and really seeing sex as a way to heal and a way to be intimate and be seen and be more expressive of different parts of myself. And for so long, my sexuality, I associated my sexuality with my self-worth. So let me take you on the journey. And along the way, you're going to essentially get your own insights. And I'm sure that some of this is really going to resonate for you. And you might get some ahas as well. So I've also been called a slut. And there was a one big experience that happened for me when I was 16, where I was called a slut, and it made a huge impression on me. But not in the way that you think, yeah, because I've heard many stories of people talking about a slut and feeling really like judged and shamed, and I totally get that. But for me, what happened is that I liked it. Yeah, a part of me actually really enjoyed it, and because I got attention from it. And there was a part of me that learned that this would get me validation and attention. Now, even if the attention wasn't necessarily great, but interestingly enough, with what happened, is that even though the way it happened could have seen what was quite derogatory and mean, the other things that happened in my life that told me that actually that made men want me. Yeah, and all I wanted to be was wanted for so long. Yeah, so let me take it back from some of my first anchorings around sex and self-worth and around why I actually got quite sexually shut down for a long time. So the messages I got growing up was essentially that exploring your sexuality was not okay. Yeah. And so I had a couple of experiences. One where I would explore with cousins and friends as kids playing doctors and nurses. And there was one experience, it was about 8 years old, where I got caught. And my parents, what they did is they took me and this other girl aside and they split us up, and we had to tell the story of what happened. And we were already like we've done something wrong. We felt like we already knew we were doing things that we shouldn't be doing, so obviously there was already that conditioning there that you shouldn't be doing these things. And we'd just been kissing and touching and what we called humping, so moving our hips, and because you know that's where all our erotic energy was and we could feel that. And as children still experience themselves as sexual beings in the womb, they are self-pleasuring in the womb. Yeah. And so you see the kids running around there these days, curious about themselves, touching themselves. And when they get told that that's not okay, that they shouldn't be that way, then that starts to get shut down. So that's what happened for me, is like I was being told that I wasn't allowed to explore this part of myself that I was curious about. So what happened is that we basically got told that we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. And my grandma was even there, and she was like, humping, I don't know what that is. And there was this part of me that was like, yes, you like knew that she knew. And I was like, you're just pretending. So it was like this big thing that we got told off for we shouldn't be doing it. And there was this big anchoring of shame around my sexual energy and around my curiosities. And I felt ashamed for this for a really long time. And even as an adult, I'm like, oh, that was, you know, I shouldn't be doing that as a kid. That was really, like, yeah, not, that was really naughty. Yeah. And when I started going and doing different sexuality programs and being around other people, and they started to open up about their experiences, I started to realize, hang on a minute, everyone goes through this. Like, almost everyone, to some degree, has experienced some shaming in childhood around this sexuality. And whether that be being caught, being shut down, not having the proper education, parents' beliefs. And so it made me feel relief, right? Especially when I was talking to other women about their explorations as a child with other kids, yeah, whether even, you know, other cousins or brothers or sisters, or and oh my God, I felt relieved. I was like, wow, I'm not the only one here. Yeah, and I wanted to really name this because I think a lot of us hold this in, and a lot of us keep it to ourselves and think that we shouldn't, that we're the only ones, essentially. So I guess I want to share this because we are innocent beings, really, inside. You know, we're all innocent, and we are also curious, especially as children, curious about the things that we're feeling, right? So if you've had that experience, I just want to know, I want you to know that you're not alone. Yeah, and it's okay. And there can be just so much freedom in when we know that other people have experienced this too. And I felt also hesitant about sharing this because there are people that I know in my family and that may listen to this as well. So I was like, oh, like, is this okay to share? I don't know, but it's this is what I'm here to do, is to share, even in the face of, like, hang on a minute, I might have that, this come back in my face at some point. But the more that I've done, the more sexuality work I've done on myself, the easier it's become. And that piece around just being around other people that are in this space and them sharing it, that has been really powerful for me. Yeah, and this is essentially why, one of the reasons I created the podcast and a community, and just helping people know that they're not alone. So in my preteens and early teens, I really considered myself quite shy and sheltered from sex, and I didn't even really know how to talk to boys. And I actually had really low self-esteem. So I didn't think I was attractive or pretty. I thought I was fat, and even people would say that I was pretty, and my mum's friends would say, oh, your daughter's really pretty. And I felt like I just couldn't see it. And the thought of even looking at myself in the mirror naked was, like, horrifying. Like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't even look at myself naked. And so I always felt quite shy and low about myself, but yet I also longed for the attention and to be wanted and to be seen as attractive as well. And I would read magazines and I saw models, and, you know, I always had this, like, vision or hope for myself that I would get to look like that one day. And I think a lot of girls and women, like, a lot experience this, especially even more now with social media. It's a lot worse. So for me, I felt that, yeah, I just didn't get attention from anyone. I didn't, and if I did, I didn't see it, right? I didn't notice it. But I definitely always had this want to be wanted. Yeah, and I felt very invisible. And even when I had friends around me that were connecting and talking to boys, I felt like they just didn't see me. Yeah. And then when I moved to Australia when I was 14, and I started going to a co-ed school, because before that I was actually at a all-girls private school. So I went to a co-ed school, and I was so shy around the boys. I really didn't know how to talk to them very well. But some of my friends and I, we started going out, and I actually did meet someone at a skate park and had my first kiss. His name was Nick. and had my first kiss, and he was this hot surfy guy, and the girls were like, he's hot. And I was surprised that he chose me. Like, I was like, wow, like he wants me. And so we kissed, and then I think we've seen each other a couple of times. And then he asked me to give him a blowjob. So my friend who was hooking up with his friend was giving him a blowjob on the side of the road. And I was shocked that time. I was like, what is happening right now? And then Nick said to me, would you give me one? And I was like, I basically froze. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, I don't even know. And it's definitely not going to just do it on the side of the road. So after that, I didn't see him for a little bit. And then I ran into him at a party and we hadn't spoken. And I asked if we were going to continue going out and he said no. And so I made it mean that because I wouldn't give him a blowjob that he didn't want me anymore. And that's when I also made an unconscious decision that I had to please men and give them what they wanted to be wanted, particularly sexually. And it's interesting that throughout my life, even before I was an escort, that blowjobs kind of became my thing, you know, the thing that I became good at and that men loved and that gave me a lot of validation. And then when I got into escorting, that was my specialty. I would have men book me just for that. Yeah. So, and I would always get so many compliments and so much validation. And that was like this, I would feel this inside of me, this like joy of this, that I'd been seen, you know, that I was validated because I was giving them something that they really loved. Yeah. So I can, it's interesting being able to see that, oh, that's interesting that thread of validation right there. Interesting. And I really encourage you, if you're listening, to explore that, like, for yourself, what comes up and for you when you hear that. Like, and does it, there's something that you can see that's happened for you in your life with that. And this is also why I created the communities on Facebook, is for you to be able to go in and share as well. You know, if you you know, if there's any resonances or any questions that you have, then please, you know, go and share in there. I'd love to hear what comes up for you when you hear these things that I'm talking about. You'll be able to find those links in the show notes. So after that, I ended up moving back to New Zealand. And the interesting thing was I'd actually end up losing a lot of weight. I dyed my hair blonde and suddenly I was starting to be noticed by boys. And the school that I went to had what we call a brother school. And so we would do group things, like run theater, musical. And I decided to join the musical that year. And because I'd been away for a year and a half or so, I was now the new girl, right? And so suddenly these boys started noticing me. And because I lost all this weight and dyed my hair blonde, and growing up, I loved Barbie dolls and I, you know, read Dolly magazine. And I had this idea in my head that men loved blonde, skinny woman. And this is what I wanted to be, essentially. And so what that I then got anchored is that men noticed me when I looked like this. Yeah, because before, I was heavier, my hair was darker, and now I look different and I get more attention. Yeah, so in my mind, I was just reaffirming this, right? I was like, yeah, well, I only look good. Men only want me if I look like this. Yeah, so again, it put a lot of pressure on me to look like that, essentially. And so what happened is that I started meeting these boys, and even though I was insecure inside, I think a lot of people started to see me as a bit more confident. But inside, I still very much felt the same. I still very much had low self-esteem. And I started doing things like naughty things that I would never have done in the past because I grew up being this good girl. And I started, like, I went and got my tongue pierced. I started bunking school some days, I started smoking, like all these things, and this is my last year of school, that I would have never done before. Yeah, and so this rebel started coming out. And I believe it's one of the reasons it started coming out is because my parents had now divorced and I'd moved back to New Zealand with my mum, and my dad stayed in Australia. And my mum then got diagnosed with a brain tumour. So I was by myself for a while. I was staying with my grandparents and I was left on my own. And this was my outlet to try and get love and connection. It was my outlet to try and belong because I didn't have that stable family unit anymore. And also I hadn't processed any grief or feelings about it because I was just going along with whatever needed to happen. And I didn't know how to feel my feelings. I didn't really know how to feel the grief or understand what was going on. And so this was an outlet for me to feel a sense of belonging. And it was through those friendships that I was doing that, and having friends that were, I had a friend that was, she was a bit more sexually active. She smoked and we would hang out a lot. And she was very good at talking to boys. She was like, she could talk to anyone. Yeah, and so because I was hanging out with her a lot, I started hanging out with more boys and getting more comfortable with it. And so being part of this musical, I ended up getting asked out by the guy in the musical. He was actually one of the leads, and he was like the lead bad guy in the musical. And so I felt really flattered, but I wasn't actually really that attracted to him. I wasn't really that interested in him. But I said yes because I had no idea. I didn't even know how to say no. And it was kind of like, well, I should even be flattered that he's asking me out. And that, was my low self-esteem. And so I think we went on one date. And then we had the musical after party. And at the musical after party, there was another guy there that I'd actually connected with. Except he had a girlfriend that was... also went to my school and we were in the same year. And so we did know each other. And so him and I did have a connection, but obviously he had a girlfriend. So it was like, well, there's nothing going to happen there. But I could tell that there was like a flirtiness going on. There was something there. And at the party, we'd had a few drinks and I knew that I was being a bit flirty with him. And I also... I wanted to end things with this other guy, but I didn't know how to tell him. I was like, oh, I'm just not really that into him. But I had no idea. I mean, this is my first like kind of relationship. And I just didn't know how to tell him. I wasn't really that interested in seeing him. So what happened is that this other guy ended up kissing me. And he's the one that kissed me, but I could feel the tangent of me that lured him into it. Like the way that I interacted with him, like I was giving him all the signs and to kiss me essentially. And then one of my friends, Lisa, came over, and she was one of those friends that if you tell her something, she's going to tell everyone. And I knew that. And she came up and she's like, oh my God. I was like, oh my God, I just kissed this guy. And when I told her that, I knew she would tell people. And so this is a part of me that wanted the guy that I was seeing to find out, but I didn't really want to tell him. I think I did end up telling him actually. And so everyone ended up finding out basically. And here's where the slut piece comes in. So here is me, this like, virgin 16-year-old that doesn't know anything about sex, and now I'm starting to get this reputation for being this slut. This is what started happening. And so me and this guy that ended things, I think he even wanted to keep seeing me, and I was like, what? I was like, no, I think it's that we don't see each other because you won't trust me. I can't really remember the conversation, but I remember thinking, I was like, what? Anyway, so one day, this is maybe a week later, I had to go to the boys' school and pick up the photos that were taken from the musical. So I walked in with a couple of friends, and there was a group of guys, about 20 guys sitting there, and both of the guys, the one that I'd been dating and the one that I kissed, were in this circle. And as I walked past them, they started chanting, Emma Jane Slut, Emma Jane Slut, Emma Jane Slut, Emma Jane slut like over and over and over. And I just, I kind of looked up and then I kept walking and I went and got my photos and then I left. And then when I got back, one of the girls at the school, who was the girlfriend of the guy that I'd kissed, their sort of group of friends had said that there'd been a big fight. And essentially, the guy that I'd been seeing punched the guy that I'd kissed and got suspended. And I was like, holy shit, at first. I was like, what the hell was going on? And then there was the other part of me that when they were calling me Emma Jane slut, I didn't feel bad that they were doing that. I didn't feel ashamed about it. I felt like finally I'm getting noticed. Like I feel seen. I'm not invisible anymore. Like they see me. Like everyone knows who I am. Like everyone sees me, knows who I am. I'm like the talk of the schools right now. I've gone from being completely invisible to being like the thing that everyone's talking about. And that to me said to me that this is how I get love and attention. I mean, obviously they weren't being very loving, but this is how I get attention. And even at the point I'm like, there are boys fighting over me. Like, wow. Yeah. And so I'm very aware that this is very, very immature now, right? Like, and I had no idea that this is what I wasn't consciously thinking this at the time. I wasn't consciously thinking this is how I get attention. No, this was unconscious. I was taking this in, learning that my sexuality gets me attention, makes people want me. And here's the thing, even though those boys were saying those things, some of them still wanted to date me. Yeah? And I was like, well, you know, it can't be that bad. They, you know, want to hang out with me and date me. So it was really interesting for me to see that as like, I'm now like this wanted woman. And then with the girls, yeah, here's the thing. I played a bit of the victim in this. And have taken full ownership of this because it's very immature to do of that. I didn't take responsibility really there for the fact that I kissed this other guy. I put it on him and said, you know, well, he kissed me. And the act itself, he did kiss me. Yeah, he came towards me. I can't remember if I stopped it or not, but I knew underneath I'd wanted it to happen because I wanted to end the thing with the other guy and I didn't know how to tell him. Yeah, and I knew this would be a way. And there was a somewhat of an attraction connection with me and this other guy. So it was, you know, really shadowy way to do that instead of actually just being honest. And so obviously it impacted her, like the girl, because it was her boyfriend. And I wasn't very good at communicating with her about it either and taking ownership. Although I did, you know, I did feel bad about that. And, but I was where I came from was like, well, he's the one that kissed me. But underneath, and if I had the level of consciousness that I have now, I would have dealt with it very differently. And I would have definitely come from a place of like owning why I did it, you know, what was going on for me and apologizing. So if you're out there listening to this podcast, I'm so sorry that that happened and for my behavior. And in fact, I've had to do a lot of self-forgiveness and ownership around behaviors like that. I've been both sides. I've been in my life. I have been the woman that's been cheated on, and I've also been the other woman. And I've explored and done a lot of healing around that. And this is something I will definitely speak to in a future episode or two around healing the other woman wound, healing the sisterhood wounds that happen when we feel betrayed, particularly around men. But I've been on both sides, yeah, and have healed that for myself. So what happened after that is that I actually ended up leaving that school. So that was my last year, because I was actually very smart and I did really well at school, and I ended up leaving a year early because I had a scholarship to university and they allowed me to come in early. So I actually ended up leaving the school, so I stopped really interacting with anyone. And then I met this guy at my work. I was working at Woolworths as a checkout chick, and I met this guy who was the classic bad boy type. So he's 4 years older. I was 16 and he was 20. And classic good girl, bad boy dynamic. And he was into drugs and smoking weed and partying, and he was alluring and mysterious. Yeah, and little old me, virgin me, who had never even touched a penis, really. little old me, who had only really even kissed two guys, was interested in this guy, right? And so I was at the point by then, I was like, I'm done being a virgin. I just want to get it over and done with. So I went to this work party, and I think, yeah, we ended up going back to his place and ended up having sex with him. And that was how I lost my virginity. And had sex with him on his couch. And I remember I bled on the couch. And I had to flip over the, I flipped over the couch cover, like the cushion, because I didn't want him to see it, because I was freaked out. I was like, oh my God, what is this? And it was the breaking of my hymen. And I had no idea what was happening. So after that, the next day we were on the bus going to, we were going back to work. I think he was working that day and my house was near work. And then I said to him, so does this mean that we're going out now? Like we're boyfriend and girlfriend. Because in my mind, I thought that going out with someone, sorry, that sleeping with someone meant that you were now in a relationship. And I have no idea where I got that information from, but that's what I believed. It's like, as soon as you sleep with someone, that means you're in a relationship. And he was very awkward about it. He didn't really say no. He was a bit like, oh, yeah, okay. Like he was, yeah, he didn't really give me a solid answer. Anyway, I thought that meant that we were in a relationship. And so I would call him and he would ignore my calls, and then I'd see him at work and I'd joke that he doesn't know how to use a phone, and then he would invite someone else to a party instead of me. And so it was very clear to me that he was not interested, right? Well, it wasn't clear to me, it was clear to everyone else but me. So he wasn't available to me. However, when we would go to work parties, he would start taking interest. Yeah, so we would end up hooking up, and then he would end up being disinterested outside of that, essentially. And for me, I was like, oh, here's this guy giving me interest. And I didn't have a male figure in my life anymore. Yeah, so to some degree, I was really searching for that older figure. You know, he was only 4 years older, but still, this older figure. And I was looking for that love. I was looking for that approval. And then I kept choosing someone that was unavailable, essentially, and just hanging on to any little piece of attention that he gave me. And so what I started to learn is that I get a man's attention and love when I give him sex. Yeah, and so that's what was happening when we were being physical. That's when he would give me attention. And then the other times he would be disinterested, essentially. And actually, over time, what happened is that we ended up hanging out more. And then I fell in love, and he said he loved me, and we actually did enter a relationship. But here's the thing, the relationship was really unhealthy, and it was very much a roller coaster ride, because a similar thing kept happening. Even though we said we're in a relationship and we're a bit closer, what would happen is that we'd get really close when we were being physically intimate, and then he would disappear for days and not be in contact, and or we'd be out somewhere and he'd just, 1 minute he'd be like really loving and affectionate, and the next minute he'd tell me to piss off. And I was so confused by this behavior. And he also was really into gambling and video games. And what I can now see is that he had these outlets that he needed, that he had, and these addictions that he had. And then whenever he needed money or sex, he'd come to me essentially, and he'd get that sense of validation and connection through those things. And I started providing for him and paying for things and going into this caretaker role, which was what I'd seen my mum do growing up, and looking after things for him. But that's how I got love. Yeah, that's how I got his attention. Yeah, so this is really when this self-worth piece anchored in, where it was like, okay, I'm worthy to a man if I give him sex. Yeah, and it's interesting to really reflect on how that's played out in my life, in the way that I've dated, in my relationships, and in my work. Yeah, so in ending up running swingers parties and then getting into escorting, which that whole work is about men paying for sex. Yeah, and that being my worth, essentially. And about 3 years in was when I, 3 years into my escorting was when I really started to heal that and started to realize that, hang on a minute, this is actually pretty huge, and I need to look at this because it's a big part of why I don't have a healthy relationship and why I'm doing the work that I'm doing. And I'll get into more of that as I in future episodes as well. So once that, what happened with that relationship is, you'll laugh at this, or maybe you'll be shocked, is we ended up getting married. I was 17. I had to forge my mum's signature on the marriage license. And we got married behind our parents' backs. I didn't tell them, because my mum wouldn't even let him in the house because of how badly he'd been treating me and how much she'd seen me go through. And so we wanted to move out. And the only way we could do that is if we could get some money from the government by being independent from our parents. And I, because we both lived at home and our parents earned too much, we'd need to move out. But we'd need the money to move out. So we wanted to move out together. And we're also at uni together. And last half of the uni, I was doing really well at uni. And in the last half, I started putting all my attention on the relationship and ended up failing a couple of classes, which was very unlike me. I was like, that would just never have happened in the past. So I really started giving away everything to the relationship. And then so we got married, and then I thought that would help, that he would be more committed to the relationship, but nothing really changed. And what started happening is one of our mutual friends started alluding to the fact that he was cheating on me, and that when he was disappearing or going away, wasn't talking to me, that he was actually with other women. And there was a time when this happened, we were broken, because we would break up and get back together all the time, where he was with another woman and I had seen them together. And eventually, we did end up getting back together. But then eventually we just started, I started to disconnect. And then I started seeing other men and I didn't tell him. Yeah, so we were broken up most of those times, and I just started dating other men, and it started getting attention from other men, and I'd checked out. So I got to this point where I had checked out, but I still wanted him to want me as well. So it was very messy. And then he started, I started telling him about that I was seeing other guys, and then he got upset about that, and yeah, it was just messy. And then eventually, when the relationship started getting physical and he got physically violent, then that was when I was like, this has to be done. And he ended up actually telling his mum that we got him married, and then his mum called my mum, and then I had to own up that we got married. And it was like this big drama, but that was actually what needed to happen for the relationship to end. And so what had started happening is I'd started obviously getting attention from other men and having other sources of love and validation when he wasn't available. Yeah, so that's what started happening. And then when I came out, well, when it came out to my mom that we got married, then that was a big thing because it started to really set me free more, because then I could actually connect with, like, be more open with my mom, because this was all happening, all the stuff was happening, and my mom had no idea. I'd really disconnected from her, and my dad was overseas, so he definitely didn't know about it. So it was like I was living this, like, really secret life away from my family. And then I ended up starting another secret life, actually, which was the life of a bulimic. So I'd put on a lot of weight in that relationship, and I'd been called fat and I'd been called ugly, and there was some really nasty stuff said to me about my looks. And so I made another decision that I had to lose weight because I needed to be pretty and skinny to be loved. That one of the reasons that my ex-husband didn't want me is because I'd put on weight and he wasn't attracted to me anymore. So I started with not eating a lot, and then I realized that I wasn't going to be able to hide the fact that I wasn't eating a lot. And then I thought to myself, well, how else can I do this? And that was, so, well, I can just eat as normal, but I can throw it up, so I'm not really getting it. And that started like basically 10 years of bulimia on and off. So I would say that to myself, I would tell myself I didn't really have it because it wasn't all the time. So sometimes it might be for a week, sometimes it might be for a couple of days, sometimes it might be I'd have, you know, 5-6 months in between. And usually when I started healing the bulimia, I realized that it was when I'd have a trigger of rejection, when I'd have a trigger of feeling unwanted, that is when it would come back, essentially. Yeah, so, and it would be something around, usually I'd made it mean that I'm not skinny or pretty enough, and that, and the bulimia would be like this purging of the self-hate that I felt around myself and my body. So I'll do another episode of my healing from that. I do talk about it in my book, Become the One, I'd love to do another episode specifically around healing that, because I think it is not talked about often enough. I know when I was looking for help, I struggled to find the right support and to take the right steps, and also just to hear that I felt like I didn't feel like I was a full bulimic. So just to hear that piece of, like, hang on, just like, it's like to take ownership of, even if it's just even if it's not all the time, there's still a problem. There's still a problem there, right? And it's deeper than the action. The action is an effect of a deeper cause, right, that's going on, and an emotional cause. So yeah, I do want to talk about that in a future episode. If you'd love me to do that, please let me know. Hit me up on social media or my Facebook communities. So after that split up, I ended up moving to Australia, and I'd lost a lot of weight again by this time, and I started getting a lot of attention. So again, it was like, oh, when I'm skinny, I get more attention. And I had like a lot of attention. So, and I would have like footy, like my professional footy players like wanting me. And so it was like this big ego boost and validation that I was wanted. And so when I was younger, I'd always had this vision in my mind that one day I'd love to walk into a room or into a club and have men want me. Yeah, and it's like, it was such a dream of mine. Like, that's what I wanted. I wanted men to walk into a room and have men look at me and want me. And that's because I had such low self-esteem. It's like, I just don't see it. And I'd actually had men give me attention in the past, and in my mind, I'd always think they were just making fun of me. Like, almost like, how could they be interested in me? Like, they're just making fun of me. And now when I look back, I'm like, oh, actually, no, they were interested in me. They weren't making fun of me. Yeah, so it was interesting to be able to reflect and look back on how blind I was because of my beliefs around myself and my body, and those real insecurities and low self-esteem that I had. So anyway, from there I basically became what society deems as a slut, which is someone that sleeps with lots of men. And I slept with lots of men, lots and lots and lots of men, and I felt like I was really empowered. I felt like I was using them, they're not using me, like I'm in the power here, I'm in control. And like, I was seeing different men that I didn't know, I couldn't keep up with who was who. Like, there was times that I've forgotten that I'd slept with certain people. And it was like, and I just didn't care. I was just like, oh, I just don't care. Like, I just want, like, I just love getting the attention. Yeah. So I was this attention whore, essentially. My friends even had this tally for me. Like, I was counting the number of men that I'd slept with. And we were going to have 100 party when I got to 100. And every time, every weekend, I'd be like, EJ, what number are you up to now? Like, it was a joke between me and my friends. Yeah, and it was bad. It's bad. I mean, I don't want to judge it as being bad. I look back now, I'm like, oh my God. I was so unconscious around my decision to sleep with these different men. Yeah, and the thing is that even though I would get these hits of feeling wanted and desired, underneath I actually felt really insecure and I felt empty, because there was actually a deeper longing for connection, for real connection. And I was getting these like scraps, seeing like crumbs of connection with men that they didn't care about me, I didn't care about them. Like, they were just a number, right? And I was probably just a number to some of these men too, right? But underneath, I like really was longing for connection. And that is why so often I'd feel actually empty. And it was like this feeling inside of me that would often spring up of emptiness. But then I would just go out again. Yeah, to avoid feeling the emptiness, I would just go out and meet someone else, sleep with someone else. Yeah, and I lived at my dad's, and I'd take this guy home to my dad's, and my dad, he's really cool. But one day he was like, he had to sit me down and be like, I think you need to stop bringing so many men home. Yeah, and that's so funny, because he had a boat, like a jet boat in the driveway, and sometimes in the mornings he'd start talking to the guys about the boat, and they'd talk about boy stuff, and I'd be like, can he just leave? Like, I wanted the guy to leave. Like, get out. So as you can see, like, this is not healthy, right? This is not a healthy decision. But it was this, like, I didn't know how to feel my feelings. I was numbing out. I was still smoking. I was drinking a lot. I started getting into party drugs. And I started using my sex to get validation, essentially, and to feel loved, right, and feel these momentary feelings of love, and then avoiding getting entangled with anyone because I didn't want to get rejected and abandoned, right? So that is why I never really allowed myself to get more connected with anyone. However, there was a guy I met, and we were friends for about 9 months, and I liked him, and we then actually finally admitted that we liked each other, and we ended up getting into a relationship. And a similar thing happened that had happened with the first relationship. It was different because we actually lived together, so he was he didn't really ignore me in the same way, but he was unhealthy as well. And so he would get on the drugs, and then he'd get triggered, and he also started getting quite abusive. And it was a really toxic on-off relationship. So eventually, after a couple of years, I ended up leaving, and I left by moving away. And that was one of my patterns, is that whenever a relationship ended, I would just move away somewhere. And I would not feel my feelings. I would not feel the grief. I would not feel the sadness. I've not allowed myself to process and heal that relationship or even look at my behavior and how I was enabling the abuse and toxicity. I just go back into lots of casual relationships and one-night stands and until I met someone else, and then the same thing would happen. And I generally had a fair gap between like relationships, is usually 4 or 5 years, and in between it was generally like lots of casual sex and relationships. And so then I moved and I ended up hanging out with a group of girls that weren't so celebratory of my conquests. And if anything, I felt more judgment from them. Whereas my previous friends were like, again, they kind of joked around with me about it. But these friends had boyfriends, these new friends, and I could feel this judgment, but it got worse. And here's the thing, I'd like start drinking to the point where I'd black out, wouldn't know what I was doing, and I'd hear stories the next day of me doing things, and I'd just shut down and I wouldn't want to know, like, don't tell me. Like, I felt so ashamed and so embarrassed. And it's like I could just completely lose control. And there was a couple of friends that were really concerned about me that were having to say, hey, like, this stuff that you're doing, that's not okay. And like, they're really concerned about my well-being and why I was doing the things that I was doing. And so, it's just like, I just didn't want to see it. Like, I couldn't take ownership. I just didn't want to see it. And I really believe that's because I would have to face this emptiness. I would have to face all the feelings and that didn't feel safe for me. Yeah. So what did end up happening is I moved again to Melbourne, and that's when I started getting to the swingers, and that's where a place where I felt like I could really be open sexually and I could explore these things that, and these curiosities. And I'm going to do more episodes on this and about some of my experiences and have explored some of my curiosities and how I've done it unconsciously and how I've gone on and done it consciously in a really healthy way. There's a lot of unconscious boundaryless sex happening in the swingers world, and I really want to speak to that in another episode and how we can actually change that and how we can do it in a more conscious, healthy way. I've seen a lot of relationships break up through swinging because they haven't been healthy boundaries or agreements in place. And so, and even the choice sometimes to do swinging is not always a conscious choice. And that was me. It was not a conscious choice. I was doing it because, again, like, I felt validated by it. And then running swingers parties, I got a lot more validation through that. So then, as I mentioned on the first episode, I got into escorting through swinging, and then 3 years into it, I got into tantra, and that is where my journey started to reclaim my true slut. Yeah, to really see how much I was using sex to feel validated, and how I only felt worthy to men if I was giving them sex, and how much of my life I had tried to please men. I had tried to give to them. And one thing that had been really present for me throughout my sexual experiences with men is that I always gave a lot. I always gave blowjobs. I gave so much. And I really never allowed myself to receive. Yeah, especially with the escorting, even them giving me pleasure, I felt was for them. I'm only, like, if they give me pleasure, they feel good about giving me pleasure. So I'm going to receive pleasure so they feel good. Because I learned that, oh, there's many men that love to give women pleasure and they get off and turned on if I'm getting off and being turned on. So I had experiences where my orgasms became about them getting off. So that's when I started to learn that, oh, my sexuality and my orgasms, then it's not really for me. It's for someone else. Actually, I had already learned that, and this was like another ingraining and anchoring in of this belief that my sexuality It's not really okay for me. It's for some only okay for someone else, and that's how I get love and acceptance and approval and feel worthy and valuable. Yeah, so it's this piece of like, I'm only valuable as a woman if I'm sexual. That's what I had believed. So the healing of that was really to reclaim my sexuality for myself. Yeah, and so that's when I started the tantric journey of learning how to be in my body, how to feel pleasure with myself without it just being like a quick rub one out kind of experience. Yeah, how to touch myself, how to look at myself, and how to deeply, deeply love myself and heal the wounds of abandonment, of rejection, of betrayal that were actually unconsciously playing out in my relating and in my work. And this is the journey that I take people through in my book Become the One. I'll put that link in the show notes. If you're resonating to this, then I would highly recommend checking it out. It's a really powerful journey to go on, and processes and lots of processes and tools in there to help you through that journey. As we go through these episodes, I'm going to be sharing with you ways that I have reclaimed my sexuality and continue to do so. And I do have a free sexual healing program for women, which is a 7-day program that I'll pop in the show notes. And that really is some of the most powerful tools that I use to help me reclaim my sexuality. So now when someone calls me a slut, I really associate it with someone that is exploring their sexuality. And to be honest, no one really calls me a slut these days, which I'm like, oh, I love it. I'm like, thank you for the compliment. Thank you. Yes, I am sexually liberated in my unapologetic truth. And I really encourage you to take that for yourself or make it mean what it means for you. Yeah, reclaiming your own slut and what it means to be called a slut. Like calling yourself a slut. I call myself a slut. I enjoy that because I know what it means for me. And I anchor that in into my body and what that means. So I've also done lots of different slut reclamation practices and embodiment exercises. This stuff is, again, I'm going to talk more about in future episodes and give you guys some tools and things that will help you with that. And I would love to hear how this lands for you. Anything that's, you know, bubbling away, any questions that you have for me, please go use the Facebook communities. I have 2 communities now. I've got the mixed gender one, which I'll again pop in the show notes, and also I've got a woman's only one. So if there's things that for you as a woman you feel more comfortable just sharing with woman only, then I have that community there for you as well. You'll find all the links in the show notes.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Deep Sexy Play. If you're ready to get sexy, then I have a playbook full of intimate questions, sexy games, and deep connection practices, which you can get at deepsexyplay.com. If this episode stimulated your mind, I invite you to like and follow the podcast. And if you're feeling extra sexy or got something out of this episode, then I would love to receive and read your review. To connect with me and my listeners, you're welcome to join my free, private, Deep Sexy Play Facebook group. You can also follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at EJLoveOfficial, where you'll also find my latest offerings and ways to work with me. All these links are in the show notes. I hope you'll be back for more Deep Sexy Play.